welcome back to another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with the movers and shakers, those film and TV and streaming makers, those producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, production designers, costume designers, film editors, sound editors, mixers, designers, VFX gurus, composers. Hopefully I'm going to add music supervisors in the coming months, stuntmen and women, and so many more. And you all know how much I love film and how much I like to talk. So it's an absolute joy to put those two things together to give you a front seat to the who, what, where, when, why, and how of movie making with these interviews. And our weekly podcast, BTL Radio Show. Now, before we go any further, May the 4th be with you. Yes, it is May 4th today when this is airing and when I'm recording this show for you. It is a day to be observed with reverence and celebration by Star Wars fans the world over, especially as we count down the days to the release of The Mandalorian and Grogu on May 22nd. I'm so excited to see Grogu. Always excited to see Grogu. And I do have to give a shout out to George Pinocchio over at ABC7, who showed up on the TCM Film Festival red carpet Thursday night with a Grogu gift for me. So thank you, George. I love my little Grogu, my ceramic Grogu. I just wrapped a fun-filled weekend at TCM Film Festival in Hollywood last night. Some wonderful films over the weekend, superb special guests, and some terrific moderated panels. I loved the panel yesterday with three acclaimed music supervisors talking about what music supervisors do on a film. As many of you already know, I love to speak with directors about their musical scores and needle drops, which is where the work of the music supervisors is so key. Hopefully I'll have a feature piece out for you about that panel on the website later this week. And by the way, the panel was moderated by the Czar of Noir, Eddie Muller, who actually got teary twice. He teared up twice during this panel with some very emotional musical moments. It really was a wonderful presentation. And of course, opening night, I was on the red carpet. We got 15 new red carpet interviews for you that are up on the website right now, behindthelensonline.net. Go check them out. Some great ones with Diane Baker, Dana Delaney, Disney animation historian and animator Andreas Deja are three of my absolute favorites. But check them out. But before you go do that, take a listen to today's show, because I'm very excited about this week's Behind the Lens, because I get to talk about Rennie Harlan, my friend Rennie Harlan, and his new film, Deep Water. You know, after 33 years of chatting with Rennie and talking about his films, he truly is not only one of my favorite filmmakers, but one of my favorite people. His intelligence, his skill, his dedication to the craft of movie making and storytelling, his directorial vision, and his kindness. I adore Rennie. The minute we stopped talking, I miss him. The minute we had to tear ourselves away from each other last Tuesday, or the 27th, whatever day that was. it was Monday, last Monday. We both missed each other automatically. Chatting with Rennie is always a joy. No matter how long we talk, it's never enough. And of course, that's what happened last week when we sat down in person for the first time in years, because he's generally in Miami or somewhere filming. So all of our interviews for a number of years now have all been by phone or Zoom phone. Since I don't Zoom, I like phones. And yes, I still have the kind of phone you can pick it up and throw it at somebody's head if you need to. But I digress. But we got to be in person last Monday. Rennie originally wanted an hour for our interview. Publicist said no. They offered 4 minutes. Have any of you ever known me to only talk for 4 minutes? I begged and got 15 minutes. But undeterred, when the formal interview, which actually Rennie stretched to 20 minutes, ended, Rennie and I then spent another 30 minutes together on our own, talking about the film, filmmaking, and a bunch of other things personal to us. Now, as usual, Rennie was engaging and insightful. Unfortunately, due to the limited time, we didn't get to cover all of the aspects of the making of Deep Water, most notably the physical production design. Now, for those that aren't familiar with the film as yet, yes, there are sharks, lots and lots of sharks. Deep Water is the story of an airline flight from Los Angeles to Shanghai that goes down in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. After surviving the crash, the survivors soon discover they're not alone, and they then must survive the shark-infested waters. Simple, right? Clear-cut story. Not the way Rennie Harlan tells it. Deep Water is directed by Rennie Harlan, written by Pete Bridges and John Kim, and stars, among others, Aaron Eckhart, Sir Ben Kingsley, Molly Bell Wright, Angus Sampson, and all of you will recognize Angus from the Insidious franchise. But I got news for you. Get ready, because in Deep Water, this is not the nice Tucker that you're all used to seeing in Insidious. He's somebody totally different in Deep Water. Film also stars Kelly Gale, Elijah Tamati, and Kate Fitzpatrick. And I'm going to talk more about Kate Fitzpatrick after you hear Rennie's interview. Cinematographer is DJ Stipson, with editing by Jeff Lamb and Fernando Velasquez providing the score. Now, there's so much we didn't get to talk about during our time together, including the physical production design that gives the film so much realism and immersion. Did you know Rennie built an entire plane that seated 300 passengers for this film? And then broke it into three main sections: the cockpit, the fuselage, and the tail. The tail was built vertically and then dropped 30 feet underwater, as when the plane crashes into the ocean and breaks apart, the tail lands on a coral reef. And it's an unstable coral reef from the weight of the plane tail, and the weight of it keeps crushing it further. So throughout the film, you're going to see when we are in the tail section, you're going to see it drop, suddenly drop. Like being at Disneyland on Tower of Terror or California Adventure on Tower of Terror, all of a sudden it drops. He filled the plane with extras, strapped everyone in their seats, and then used stuntmen as those passengers sucked out of the plane when there are explosions and the plane breaks apart. He also used stuntmen as dead bodies in the plane, and underwater in submerged portions. So this is beyond realistic and immersive. These aren't mannequins. These aren't dummies. These are real people that he used playing dead bodies floating in water with arms, getting the buoyancy of the salt water. But in our interview, what we did get to cover was Rennie's meticulous approach to filmmaking, particularly highlighting the film's exceptional sound design, the score mix by Mark Blains, who worked in concert with the sound designers, mixers, and editors, DJ Stipson's cinematography, Fernando Velasquez's composition, particularly the emotional impact of a recurring single piano note motif that is one moment it's emotional, it touches your heart, there's a poignancy, the next moment it's chilling. It's just, I love Fernando's score, and I love that recurring single piano note. And of course, we talk about Jeff Lamb's editing. Now, this comes as no surprise in a film of Rennie's, and if you go back and you listen to our interview from The Strangers, Part 3, the soundscape is crucial. for Rennie. And here, soundscape, and we talk about this, includes details like muffled underwater sounds, ticking clocks, the sizzle of fire, all of which contribute to the film's tension and realism. Now, Rennie dives into his extensive research and planning that went into the film. I've never known Rennie to not do extensive research and planning, to be quite honest with you. And this is particularly important in creating authentic cockpit procedures between our two pilots, Aaron Eckhart and Sir Ben Kingsley, and the realistic character reactions during moments of crisis. He also explains his deliberate choices in sound and music, such as reducing audio in key moments to heighten emotional impact and focusing on melodic elements rather than traditional suspense cues. Shifting to the film's visual grammar, plenty of praise for the cinematography of DJ Stipson, noting the dynamic camera work that moves through the different sections of the plane and into the water, creating a sense of immediacy and danger. The lighting, underwater lighting, is spectacular, I have to tell you. And contrasting that with the exterior lighting, you know, a gray sky over gray waters of an ocean, it's really cool. A key component of the film is Rennie's work, not only with DJ and detailing how they planned lens choices, lighting, and camera placement to enhance the story, but also Jeff Lamb's editing, which is fantastic. We are immediate. It is rapier. We go from, cockpit to tail to fuselage, back and forth, into the water as we lose the cockpit. We've got the tail. We've got the fuselage. We've got sharks, you know, ready to come up in onto what's left of the fuselage. We have a child standing out on a piece of floating plane. And Aaron Eckhart, of course, is going to be the one who's going to swim out there amongst the sharks and try and save her. Nail-biting tension, riveting, and it all is brought together beautifully. Now, the film's character development is so strong, as the narrative allows us as viewers to connect with multiple characters. Something that's always important to Rennie. And here, we are getting invested in characters, some of whom we might lose. So it's really interesting how this is structured and how these characters are developed. But stand out, however, amongst all the characters is that of Becky, who is a grandmother. And she's flying to see her little granddaughter. She's exquisitely played by Australian actress Kate Fitzpatrick, along with the children in the film, step-siblings Finn and Cora, who are beautifully played by Elijah Tamati as Finn and Molly Bell Wright as Cora. And I got to tell you, Molly steals every scene she's in. And her chemistry with Aaron Eckhart is off the charts heartwarming. I mean, tissues, people. Tissues and tears. I cannot think of any shark movie or disaster movie like this I've ever seen. I cried, I needed tissues, and a lot of that here is due to Molly's performance as young Cora, and of course, Kate's performance as Becky. And you're going to hear Rennie explain the challenge of balancing action with these character moments, and stressing that emotional investment in the characters is essential for the film's impact. This is not just a visual spectacular with sharks eating people and planes crashing. It is emotional. We feel humanity. And this is always important to Rennie, is that we have emotional investment in the characters. And he succeeds here beautifully. So when you see this film, I hope that all of you take note of that. Now, and talk about a loving anecdote. This was so charming and so sweet. Rennie shares the story of casting Kate Fitzgerald as Becky, describing her return to acting after a long hiatus and the emotional resonance she brought to the role. So strap yourselves in and take a listen as director Rennie Harlan dives into deep water. My favorite person in the world, Rennie.
Oh my God, why am I your favorite person?
You should know after all these interviews that we've been doing lately.
I know, but I didn't know that I was your favorite
you
person.
You are my favorite person.
Oh my God, can we hug?
Of course we can hug, Rennie. Oh, the new daddy. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. You're so sweet.
It's a thrill in person because we haven't done anything in person since like Legend of Hercules.
Oh my God.
We've done everything on phone.
That's terrible.
I know.
It's been too many years without you.
I know.
But now when I hugged you, it just all came back to me.
Oh, you lie so good.
No.
But I have to tell you, I followed your instructions. You wanted me to watch Deep Water even more closely than I've watched all the other films. I did. 9 pages of initial notes.
Jesus.
Past one.
Well, thank God we have 2 hours.
Past two.
I love your book. It looks like it has a wealth of...
Oh, yeah. My notes from The Strangers are in here. This is... I got 44 years of these.
You do this stuff seriously.
I even made a copy of the initial notes for you, Rennie.
Oh, wow.
That you can keep.
Okay. I want to.
So, just what jumps out at me as I'm watching it.
Wow.
But now, I have to tell you, the biggest thing that jumped out at me with this film is once again, and I know you're so fastidious about it, is your sound.
You always talk about the sound, and I love that.
It is spectacular. The sound design, the sound editing, and the score mix. Mark Blanes, who did your score mix of Fernando's score, it is impeccable.
Wow.
Truly impeccable.
Did you see the movie in a theater, or did you see it at home?
Saw it at home.
Okay.
I'm going to go to the theater and see
it. Because if you saw it in a theater with an Atmos Dolby system, I'm surprised myself when I watch it in a theater because I hear things I'm like, I don't even remember we did all these little details.
The details are impeccable. And one of the key elements of your sonic profile here is the score and that single piano note motif that plays throughout the film. And sometimes the single note might be a little quicker, other times slower. So it'll, sonically, you start thinking more somber, happier. There's nothing that gives away sharks in the music, unlike Jaws and John Williams.
Right.
But what we get is a real taste of humanity. As the plane is crashing and it's tumble, 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 you've got Jeff Lamb's incredible editing, which has you on the edge of your seat. But then you have the sound that is muffled by water. So we're hearing muffled, faint prayers and screams and people trying to call out to somebody else. How long did the sound design take on this one, Rennie?
I feel like I should bring you on in my movies before I even start shooting them and just have you read the script and tell me what to focus on and how to design things because you're such a... Your mind is so sharp and you really analyze these things beautifully and it's you're one of those few people who actually appreciates what we do and pays attention to the things we do and so easily, you know, you make a movie and some critic can say like, oh, this is just BS and this is stupid and whatever. But to have somebody actually pay attention to the things that we did, is it a great movie or not? That's what everybody can judge, you know, for themselves. But we did these things for a reason and for a purpose. And with this movie particularly, I wanted these sequences to feel really realistic. And I wanted the audience to feel like they are there. And I did a lot of research in terms of like, okay, what do the pilots do? What switch do they turn? And what button do they push? And what do they say to each other? How do they act? How do the flight attendants act? What would people who are in this situation, what would they do when they know that most likely in the next 2 minutes they are going to die, but they have this moment still to be on this earth and figure out what they think and feel and so on. So, and sometimes it's like in the early part of the when the plane starts falling apart, there's a lot of big sound and walls ripping apart and engines exploding and big music and all that. But then I wanted to really bring it down when we when we are in that last sort of 30 seconds or a minute before we actually hit the water. I wanted to kind of take away all the sound and that way force the audience to really be there with the characters and also change the music from being big and bombastic into being very melodic and so on. I'm just stunned that you notice all that stuff and you pay attention to that stuff and it's just I don't know how to express this enough that so many times you feel like you do all this work, you do it seriously. People kind of look at movies like, okay, here's an artistic movie and here's a product of entertainment. Mm-hmm. And I feel like 99% of the time my movies are put into that sort of entertainment section and people in general don't really appreciate the things that we do because it's not art. And you are one of those few people who actually sees that, and I'm just blown away by it. I don't know how to tell you what it means to me.
Well, yeah. It means so much to me that you make a film with this much care, Rennie.
But why nobody else notices that but you?
Because they're idiots.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, morons, idiots, whatever we want to call them.
Yeah,
but. You know, hand in hand with that, with the sound, which, I mean, you even have a clock ticking in there at about the 20-minute mark, which is right before we're in the cockpit and we're about to finish the tumble, and we hear a clock that's ticking. Early on, when we have the fire igniting in the baggage area, we hear the sizzle, which blew me away. But hand in hand with that, you have DJ's amazing cinematography with all of this, capturing the faces, capturing the bodies, great zooms as we're going through the plane. We're going through the main cabin and we're going down and we're going into baggage and right through the metal containers. And we're eye level with this fire, this explosion that's about to start. That is so compelling, so riveting. And you continually do that throughout the film once we're in the water. And we have a POV eye level, so we are in the water. You feel as if a shark or something is going to come and get you and pull you under because of Jeff's editing with the quickness of how things are unfolding and then not seeing exactly what's underneath the surface for quite a while. How did you work with DJ as your DP and then with Jeff in editing to craft this visual grammar? Because this is a twofold visual grammar of the lighting and lensing and then the edit that follows it.
Wow, that's you are the only journalist that I ever talked to who actually knows the name of my DP and knows the name of my editor and all these things. It's like, I don't know how that's even possible, but I do a lot of research and a lot of preparation for the movie, and I work with the DP also very, very closely in figuring out, like, how are we going to shoot this movie? What kind of lenses we are going to use? Is it going to be wider lenses in these scenes, and or longer lenses, and the lighting, and all these things? And like I'm sure you noticed in the beginning, we when the plane is about to take off, we wanted it to have this late afternoon, you know, low sunlight coming in through the windows, and these flares and all that stuff. We wanted it to be really beautiful, and then in the shooting of it, we really had a plan of like how we go from longer lenses into the wider lenses as things get worse and worse, and where we place the camera and how the camera sometimes goes underwater and then above water and all that. So it was all very, very carefully planned. And then I just got plainly lucky with my editor, because for financial reasons, we needed to do the post-production in Australia. And I thought, okay, well, I have to find an Australian editor. And then I found Jeff, who had he hadn't done anything, you know, major, big, no American movies, anything like that people would know him for. But he had done this little horror film that I saw, and I thought it was geniusly edited. And we talked, and I just fell in love with him. And he became one of my best friends. I spent with my wife, we spent a lot of time in Australia during the post-production, and we would just hang out at his house. He edits in his house. He has this beautiful little house, and in the basement he has his editing room, and his kids run in and out and do this and that and blah blah blah, and it's just this kind of a family affair, and I love him to death. He's so smart. He's so intuitive, and it's really his contribution to this film was amazing. What the kind of ideas he had, and how he changed and shaped the story from what we had shot. So I wish that I could always work with him. He's an unbelievable artist.
Well, the back and forth that he does, and you very smartly in visually designing this film. We have three distinct sections of the plane. We have the cockpit, we have the fuselage, and we have the tail. We have our tail that is vertical on a coral reef, which affords some really incredible visuals as well as very sharp rapier editing. We've got the fuselage, and then we've got the cockpit, which eventually we kind of lose that. But you give us three very distinct POVs, which gives Jeff a lot to cut from and gives us a lot of, oh my God, what's happening here, what's happening there. And you keep taking us back and forth. Nobody is overlooked. You let us become attached to so many of the characters. Becky, the grandmother, oh my God, beautiful. And the way she looks after little Finn. And of course, Cora. And I got to tell you, Aaron Eckhart and kids is always a joy to see. He's so good with kids. But, you know, we love them. And you continually take us back to them. You take us back to people that have conflicts. So how challenging is that, to give us the humanity amidst all of the blood and shark feeding frenzy?
That to me is the key, and that's like I was referencing my favorite movie from the 70s. It's really about the characters, and it's tricky because it's so easily, especially producers say like, oh, you know, you're spending too much time with these people. Our audience is going to get bored. We need action. We need something spectacular to happen. And so to find the balance where you know, you can't, especially in the beginning of the movie, you can't take 20 minutes and just say like, oh, here's the mystery of this character, and they're going to now talk about their the difficult childhood and and their divorce and whatever. It's weaving the character stuff into the story so that it's interesting and it's sometimes funny. Like you mentioned, Becky and the guy who is sitting next to her, you know, they have this funny banter from the get go, and when you get the audience so that they laugh at that and they are into it, then it works. But you can't have so much that people are like, oh, you know, okay, now we have to listen to this mystery there. So it's a tricky balance, but. If you don't care about the characters, then nothing matters. Then, you know, the sharks could eat the whole plane and everything could blow up and everybody could perish. And you're just like, okay, whatever, give me the next spectacular visual thing. So that to me was really, really, really the key. And again, I think it was in the script, it was in the actors, it was in the shooting and the editing, that it all came together the way it did. And you know, having great actors like the kids, you know, the Finn and Cora, you know, they are like little kids, but their acting is so convincing and so realistic. And I have to tell you about Becky. She to me is my favorite character in the whole movie, and her story, which is that she's an Australian actor. And she was a big deal in her youth. She was a big TV star, movie star, and stage star in Australia. But as it happens in this world and with women particularly, it's like you reach a certain age, and then necessarily, you know, your phone isn't ringing anymore. And so for 20 years, she had not done nothing. She wasn't in anything. For 20 years, she thought her career was over and whatever, she's a grandmother, that's it. And my genius casting director found her, because I wasn't happy with the people that I was seeing. And I said, like, I need my Shelley Winters from Poseidon Adventure. Mm. And then he thought of this lady. He was like, well, whatever happened with Katie Fitzpatrick, you know, she used to be such a great actor, used to be. It's terrible to even say, but so he found her and brought her to me, and she read for the role, and I was like, oh my God, you are Becky, and she was so thankful for this. I felt like she was like Gloria Swanson in Sunset Boulevard or something. It's like she got her chance to come down that stairway one more time. After 20 years of, she thought she will never act again. Nobody would ever care about her again. She got to walk down those stairs with the camera on her, with the light on her, and say her lines. Oh my God, I loved her so much. And she came to work every day, dedicated and ready and prepared and happy and smiling. The love she gave to all those children and everybody else in the crew, she was just an exceptional person. And I, to this date, we message almost every day to each other, and it's been 3 years now, and I just love her so much, and for her to be able to say, I'm starring in this movie after all these years, it's just, and the way she does that job, it's like, what if I have a great personality? You don't. It's all her brilliance. It's timing. Timing. It's experience. It's knowledge. And
her final scene is, I needed tissues. I was crying.
I'm so sorry, everybody, but we have to
come. Hey, we're talking. We're talking.
I have Jean's getting ready to come in too.
Oh, okay.
So we
have
to keep going.
Jean can wait.
I'm so sorry. We need to wrap up.
No, but. Okay, Renny, so another brilliant, brilliant job.
Thank you. I wish everybody was like you.
And you can always call me or email me for more thoughts.
Okay, I will.
So
I will. Thank you. You're amazing. We have to do this
again.
All the time.
All the time. And that was Renny Harlin discussing Deep Water. But lucky me, after my review published last week, Kate Fitzpatrick reached out to me about the film. And
And I hope she doesn't mind me reading this to all of you. But she had this to say about her experience playing Becky. Quote, "I did my own stunts. We all did. The stunt team were amazing. Almost too busy with everything else they had to do, but still worried about us. We had to prove we were capable of doing whatever. Then we were trained and watched over like babies. We were made honorary stuntmen. The water in the crash scenes was not heated." I had to ask her about that. I mean, Rennie's Finnish. Cold water doesn't bother him. But for the rest of everybody else, it might be a problem. But for all those scenes in the tail section afterwards, it was. That 25, 30-foot ladder made from the metal legs of the seats was the thing. With heavy saturated clothes, once you were there, you had to stay. Brakes were not really a thing. The camera was on a crane. It was fantastic. It was wonderful to see the mechanics of the water rising. My final scene had warm water, but I didn't notice. I was freezing when I finished. Can't remember when I had so much fun. I'm proud of having done it quite a few times. Honorary stunt person. End quote. Watching Kate in this film, she most definitely deserves the title of honorary stunt person. This is old school stunts. And it's fantastic watching this because you see this, you realize this. This isn't green screen when you're watching the film. This is old school stunts. So, yay, Kate. Yay for little Elijah Tamati. Yay for Richard Crowley. These were our main people that were hanging on to this metal, the metal ladder made from, that was essentially the arms of the chairs on the plane. And I can't thank Kate enough for reaching out to me with her insight and for sharing that with me about her stunt work. And to Bill Williamson, a reader and listener who was friends with Kate and who turned her on to the review. So thank you, Bill, as well. Now, that's all the time we have today. Make sure to check out Deep Water in theaters now. I know I'll be seeing it again, this time in the theater, so I can relish the Dolby Atmos sound, because I've been ordered by Rennie to go do so. I'll do it anyway, but that just gives me an added impetus. And remember, there is no such thing as too many sharks or shark movies or survival movies. Now, for my full review to Deep Water, my written feature of my interview with Rennie, including some of the tidbits from our extended off-camera audio chatting, go to behindthelensonline.net. Now, there are some other new reviews and interviews that are up as well, including 15 new interviews from the TCM Film Festival Red Carpet. So, until next week, I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.